Covered in battle scars, a princess returns to her kingdom, determined to stand on her own, lost leg or not. But her independent fire threatens to burn out of control until she meets a gentle surgeon who has more than enough love for her. I'm Heather Songster, and this is Hopelessly Romantic. Welcome back, readers and romance seekers, to another episode. We are sinking into new territory today with a selection from the Harlequin Medical Romance series with The Surgeon and the Princess by Karen Bain. Today's story will also touch on topics concerning depression and suicide, so go ahead and take note. I suppose there's a lot to unpack here with my choice for this week. For starters, I'll mention that instead of going to the bookstore for my next selections, I actually went straight to the Harlequin website and ordered from them. I wanted to get more choice than I would from the bookstore, since I was getting a little frustrated with not being able to find the books I had in mind. In the group of recent releases from the website, I came across the medical romance genre. I was intrigued, though I realized I shouldn't really have been surprised that the genre had existed. For some reason, people love putting romance and hospital drama into the same blender, though I don't think these books would be as, let's say, soapy as ER was back in the day. As for our author, Karen Bain is a North Irish woman who was inspired by the books in her grandmother's collection and seems to write nearly exclusively for the medical romance genre, though under Harlequin's UK imprint, Mills and Boone. And as for what made me choose this particular book, well, would anyone be surprised that I went with the one with a princess in it? Yes, the dark secret is out. I like the royal romance stuff. So sue me. But how did The Surgeon and the Princess stack up? We'll start with our cover, of course, and there are a couple of things to note right off the bat. Much like how the other imprints have their own flair, the medical romance flaunts itself with a faded blue border on the bottom, imposed with a heart monitor line. This particular cover also sports the words larger print, because I could not find a copy from Harlequin that had regular printing. The couple are tender, though not fully embracing. The woman has her hair in a stylish updo and is wearing a pale lavender gown, with the gent sporting a light blue suit. They are touching noses, and my impression is that it looks like they're on a balcony, perhaps posing for a PR photo or doing an appearance. But there's nothing to actually suggest that's what's happening, just my wild speculation. Inside the cover, we meet Georgiana Ashley, Princess of Bardot, as she's working out on a treadmill. Through flashbacks and exposition, we learn of her story, her time as a medic in the army, and the explosion that took her leg and scarred her body. Reading that she had been scarred, and even though some of those scars had already faded, I was shaking my fist at the absolute cowardice of the cover artist for not adding any sort of blemishes to the woman's face or body. That would have been interesting. But Georgiana isn't just dealing with physical scars. She has mental ones as well, and I'm glad that the book isn't shying away from the concept of PTSD. Ever since coming back home after losing her leg, she's been struggling to get back to a sense of normalcy. But the problem was is that she wasn't exactly thrilled to be a princess, let alone heir to the throne. Heck, that's why she ran off to the army in the first place. As she finishes her run, frustrated with her inability to spring back as quickly as she would have liked, a voice gently chastises her for working herself too hard. It's Edward Lawrence, a spinal surgeon and physical rehabilitation doctor. He'd come on business when the Queen requested his presence after she had fallen from a horse, and it looks like he was passing by on his way out of the palace. Georgiana isn't having anything to do with him, though. She's just not icy. She is downright hostile, and is probably the most hostile that we've ever seen a heroine when she's introduced to the love interest. Since returning home, she'd purposely avoided contact with the outside world, so her current state would remain unknown or at least a mystery to those with an insatiable appetite for royal scandal. Unveiling her broken body was something that she wanted to do at her own pace, if at all. If barging in here uninvited, he'd stolen some of that power from her, and now she just wanted him gone. Yet again, he showed a blatant disregard for common courtesy by failing not only to leave, but to apologize. Edward only seemed concerned that the way she was exerting herself would only do her recovery further harm, but Georgiana isn't charmed by him for a single moment. He does get a pause from her, though, when he mentions that the equipment in her home gym isn't exactly suitable for her needs, as far as recovery goes. The room was outfitted the way you'd expect a gym to look in a royal palace, with gilded mirrors and bleached oak floors, the equipment possibly chosen for looks, rather than the needs of a recovering warrior. And while Georgiana enjoyed the use of water therapy to help get her back originally, and up and walking, there wasn't a pool here that would fit her needs. And to his credit, Edward does seem to know that he's on thin ice with Georgiana. He tells her that he can promise complete privacy at his recovery clinic, with discreet hours at her choosing. He's walking a rather thin line as well, since the queen had asked him to the palace not just for herself, but for Georgiana's sake as well. It just so happened that the queen didn't want her daughter to know that she was interfering. Edward has to be sensitive to all of this, and was determined to do right by Georgiana, despite her hostility, knowing full well that he has to step softly. Despite her obvious disability, she still had that inbuilt alertness that came with being a soldier. One false move, and he had no doubt she'd battle anyone or anything that threatened her. She certainly looked like a warrior, as well as having that defensive attitude that emanated from her in waves. Her slight frame was toned with defined muscles that would put most people to shame. Eyes blazed with the green fire in her heart-shaped face, her defiant chin tilted upward. The flowing brunette locks he'd seen in newspaper features had been shorn into an edgy cut. One side of her head was shaved close to the scalp, while the other was choppy and nonconformist. He wouldn't be surprised if she'd done it herself in a fit of pique. It made her look like the rebel she was reputed to be. The addition of a prosthetic right leg only added to that intimidating impression of someone who is not to be messed with. This description not only painted a very vivid image of our heroine, but also made me further curse that cowardly cover artist because she doesn't look anything the way she was described on the cover. Georgiana also makes some snap judgments about Edward, how he could do whatever he wanted, not being tied down to family obligations, which we are told through exposition is not true. But nevertheless, Edward isn't dissuaded from his offer to help. Georgiana even starts taking off her clothes as a method of domination, not in a sexy way, more in a, you are in my space and I own this space and I can end you if I want to just look at my muscles kind of way. She doesn't say yes to Edward's offer immediately, and he knows when he's dismissed. As he turns away, she tries to antagonize him further by throwing her shorts at him. Instead of turning around where he knew he'd see her in her underwear, he keeps the shorts and walks away. Later on, we see Georgiana taking a tea tray to her mother, and we see how the queen has been adjusting to Georgiana's disability, and in the princess's opinion, it's not gone well. Georgiana has been trying to avoid her mother's pity parties, as she's calling them, knowing full well that the queen's attitude was one of the reasons Freddy, Georgiana's brother, had killed himself. As far as the brothers go, we get hints until not quite the end about the reasons for his suicide, but it doesn't take a lot of deducing on the way to know that, well, he was gay. And it leaves a rather sour taste in my mouth that this is the first outright LGBTQ+ representation that I can remember since starting this podcast, and it's with a young prince who's committed suicide. It's not a good look. But the conversation with the queen did its job, and Georgiana decides that she'll take up Edward's offer. Which takes us to Edward's perspective, as he's informing his business partner at the clinic about their arrangement. Through more of the dreaded telling instead of showing exposition, we learn that Edward has a lot on his plate, from working at the rehabilitation clinic to doing surgery days at the hospital to a lot of familial commitments that eventually drove away his ex. This doesn't bode well for our hero, does it? But true to his word, he goes to pick up the princess completely incognito as promised, even going so far as to making sure Georgiana is fully hidden in the back of his car. Because like any good royal romance, avoidance of the press is critical. I'll probably name that trope as soon as I can think of a good name for it. They get to the facility, and there's an interesting moment that really stood out to me. He rested his hand on her elbow to gently guide her and jolted her back to the present. Etiquette around members of the royal family included a no-touching rule, one she should be enforcing right now. Except it had been a long time since she'd felt that human connection. In hospital, she detested being poked and prodded and having her limbs manipulated. No control over her own body. Being back home, she'd been so focused on getting better, in private, that she'd starved herself of basic human interaction. It was nice to have someone touch her so casually without it being a big issue. I think the value of human touch is woefully underestimated. It's been declared a love language for a reason, and even among platonic friends, touch can be vastly important. And might be doubly so for someone like Georgiana, who has to abide by strict rules regarding who can or cannot touch her. So that passage stood out to me as a moment when things might be able to start to thaw for the two of them. Edward shows her around the main facility, and they establish boundaries that she doesn't really need input from him, just access to the space. He takes a moment to apologize for not showing her the pool yet, but she wouldn't be able to use it without supervision anyway, promising to sort something out for her next session. So what will our headstrong princess do? I'm sure we don't need to guess that after she finishes her workout, she heads straight for the pool, following the smell of chlorine. And she doesn't really think this through, since she didn't even have a swimsuit, but she really wanted the relief of the water more than she was deterred by wet underwear. After her swim, sans prosthetic, she gets out and the inevitable happens. She slips and falls onto the ground, and not gently either. Luckily, Edward finds her quickly and begins to check her over. Georgiana, still angry about not being self-sufficient, resists her attempts to help her, which finally gets him to snap at her, asking why she doesn't want his help. And this is the trigger that opens the emotional floodgates, and she begins to cry. Edward feels awful about his role in her tears, but feels only more resolved to help her through her recovery. We get a peek at Edward's thought process also, about how he feels obligated to handle pretty much everything in his life, from his work to his family, because he hates the idea of someone else having to step in for him. And so for the moment, the sooner he helps Georgiana, the sooner he can return to other obligations. After Georgiana finishes up her cry session, she and Edward have thawed out enough to make good-natured jokes at the other's expense, and they talk about setting up future sessions for her. On their way out of the office, Ed stops by his desk to grab an ice pack for Georgiana, and she sees the paperwork that had swamped him most of the night. Ed's been working on a charity that would help provide prosthetic limbs to children, and he's been trying to find a way to host a gala to attract donors. Our princess does the expected thing and offers the palace ballroom for the event, and Ed is thrilled. The next day, Georgiana can't help but fight with some emotions as she waits for her therapy session that night. She's feeling on guard, especially after her tumble and subsequent breakdown, unhappy that she's shown such emotion. Despite that, though, she was thankful for the catharsis that crying turned out to be, and she was ready to go forward, feeling cleansed. That night at the clinic, she does her workout and then finds Ed so that she can go for a swim, this time with proper supervision, when she finds him going over more paperwork for his charity. Turns out, he's also looking for a guest speaker, and when Georgiana offers herself up, I'm feeling a little bit like it's all very cliché. I get what the author is trying to do. She's showing us that both Ed and Georgiana are compassionate people who want to do good in their lives. But the charity setup feels a little too convenient, if not somewhat forced. Don't get me wrong, I'm not opposed to the charity setup at all, but the way it's executed in the novel feels a little clunky. But Georgiana does note that she will eventually need to come public with her injury, so might as well do it at a charity meant to showcase the need for prosthetic limbs. Ed decides to join her for the swim, which I'm pretty sure is only so Georgiana has a justification to see him only in swim trunks, but they get to talking about how hydrotherapy works for Georgiana and why it helps her. A little earlier in the chapter, we had met a young girl named Hannah who had just lost her leg in an accident and wasn't adjusting very well. Ed had been looking for other angles where he could approach her recovery. It becomes a tender moment where Georgiana can open up about her own experience, and she can see where Ed's coming from in terms of her recovery. Their conversation switches to teasing, and then into a water fight, but it goes a little awry. The water swirled and moved alongside her as he launched himself after her. Georgiana went to give an excitable shriek, only to inhale a mouthful of water. It went up her nose and down her throat, making her choke. Panic swamped through her, and she dipped under the water. She lost focus, tried to bring herself upright, forgetting she no longer had 2 feet to steady herself on the bottom of the pool. Now she was gulping the water, splashing desperately in an attempt to keep herself afloat. Arms caught around her waist, pulling her from the depths, hands holding her fast until she broke the surface and could breathe again. "I've got you. Just anchor yourself to my waist and take slow, deep breaths." Ed's face was so close to hers, she had nowhere to look but into his eyes. More than anything, this feels like a metaphor for Georgiana's life. She can present a solid front, pretending that she has a strong foundation to base her recovery on, being completely self-reliant. However, that foundation isn't as strong as she thinks it is, and she needs to allow herself to accept the help from another person so she can build herself back stronger. And I really think it's a good message. Yes, self-reliance is a good thing, but when it begins to impede your well-being, you need to be comfortable accepting help. Once the two shower and get dressed, separately of course, they leave the clinic, and Ed absentmindedly asks Georgiana if she'd like to get a coffee. He is starting to accept that he might be feeling something a bit more for the princess, and she's excited that he considered her to be normal enough to ask out on a coffee date. She accepts, hoping that she won't be recognized. Throughout their cafe stop, Georgiana can't help but feel the attraction she has to Ed just growing and growing, surprising herself since she hadn't expected to feel anything for anyone after her amputation. They talk about the upcoming gala, Ed being thrilled that he can finally settle on a date and send invitations, and they dip a little more into why Georgiana feels the way she does about herself, about why she went into the army. She'd hoped that she can get away from people who treated her like an object rather than a person, but also wanted to do something productive with herself, something she felt mattered, so she became an army medic. And now she felt that she was fighting the disappointment from her parents with her injury. First, they had an imperfect son with his sexuality, and now an imperfect daughter. I want to note that the book uses the word imperfect, but this is a result of Georgiana's hang-up with her parents' perception, not any moral judgment on her part. While they're talking about her parents, Ed mentions that the reason he called in on Georgiana was because the Queen had suggested it when he'd come to consult her on her writing injury. This justifiably sets the princess off, now wondering if the only reason he was being kind to her was a combination of obligation and pity. Ed defends himself, rightly so, and Georgiana starts to understand that her relationship with her parents has colored every interaction she's had, and apologizes. Around this time, a family comes in, with a young boy who is just so interested in playing with the door for whatever reason. Well, the inevitable happens, and the poor kid gets his fingers crunched in the heavy cafe door. How lucky it is that an army field medic and a surgeon just happened to be in the building. They both spring into action, and I have another "America is actually weird" moment when Ethan's father calls for an ambulance, but finds out that none are available. I'm thinking that if I were in the room, we'd get the kid's hands bandaged up to stop the bleeding and then drive him to the ER. An ambulance wouldn't even entered my mind. But Georgiana and Ed are there to help, and it's lucky that they're only a block away from the clinic, well within walking distance. Georgiana makes a more than competent nurse to Ed as he stitches up the kid's hand, and she's feeling good that she hasn't lost this part of herself. It also inspires her to ask if she can help with Hannah, the young girl Ed was telling her about. They arrange a meeting, and after agonizing on how she should approach the situation, Georgiana decides to make it an informal affair, non-official, complete with shorts to show off her prosthesis. Ed introduces Hannah and her family to Georgiana, and it's amusing to see the reaction of the parents. They're flabbergasted that the crown princess of their country is here to see their daughter, and all the while Hannah is insisting that Georgiana doesn't look like a princess at all. She has to ask her mom if she actually is a princess, and mom's just like, "Trust me, kid." It's a bit funny, if not amusingly wholesome. But they get the result that they were hoping for. Hannah makes a connection with Georgiana, and now with a role model to look up to, she's more open to a prosthetic and working on recovery. They even have a bit of a swim with Hannah before she and her family leave. Ed and Georgiana decide to stay in the pool, and having crossed the hurdle of being seen in public with her prosthesis, Georgiana doesn't mind when an older couple come in to use the pool as well. The husband goes to swim for his therapy, and his wife cheers him on. And Georgiana gets the feeling that perhaps pushing people away while she recovered was to her detriment, and how thankful she was now that Ed was helping her. And right as she's finished having this thought, the woman she's watching has a seizure right there where she's standing and falls into the pool. Georgiana and Ed jump right into action again, both of them getting the woman out of the water. When it's determined that the woman isn't breathing, Georgiana begins CPR, while Ed breaks out an AED machine, and they get the woman conscious. Once again, they've saved the day. After everything settles, Ed breaks it down for Georgiana. With both Hannah and the medical emergency, she clearly has a lot to offer. And at the end of that particular chapter, he offers Georgiana a job. He elaborates, saying that she could be a mentor or even an aquatherapist, reassuring her that it's not just a vanity position that he would make up to make her feel better. She's not totally against the idea, and they decide to talk it out over dinner, fried chicken takeout. And they also talk about Ed's life, how he's busy with his family, and how, unfortunately, he didn't have time for his previous relationship. It perplexes Georgiana, since he always seems to have time for her, but it's good that they could open themselves up to each other like this. She also talks about her own heartbreak, but it's about her brother, Freddie, and why he had killed himself. How she hated that he had felt that he had been forced into a box and eventually took the only way out that he saw, and how it was one of the reasons she joined the army. Much like Georgiana, Ed has a brother of his own, one who no one would thought be able to walk. But because Ed's family didn't settle with those limitations, he was able to walk and gain some sense of independence, and Ed was inspired to create his charity for families facing similar struggles. In all, it's an open conversation, one you'd expect at the beginning of a budding relationship, and it goes exactly how you'd expect, with a stolen kiss. Ed made the first move, and Georgiana is reveling in it, but then he pulls away. A creeping sense of unease made its way through her body. Rather than wanting to make mad, passionate love to her, he was pulling away from her. Ed? All her insecurities came rushing back. Why on earth had she thought a handsome, kind doctor would be attracted to a woman with so many obvious issues? He'd probably only kissed her because he felt sorry for her. She hadn't been subtle in her admiration of him. Georgiana got up, wanting to escape any further humiliation, but Ed was there before her, blocking her exit. Before she could dodge around him and bolt for the door, Ed was cradling her face in his hands and smiling at her. "Stop talking." Passion ignites. They have a full makeout session, But wisely, Edward does have to pull away again, putting on the responsibility hat. He has a ton of family and career obligations, and Georgiana is still adjusting and recovering from her traumatic event. Not to mention that they're technically in a doctor-patient relationship, and ethically it's probably a good idea to keep it strictly professional. And Georgiana is, you know, royalty. Speaking of which, after the kiss, Georgiana takes a few nights off with the clinic, so she's spending more of her evenings with her parents. She wants to address how they approach the relationship with her, and the entire time, I can't help but feel they're not really presented in a way I'd expect royalty to behave. They feel more like an extravagantly wealthy family. Status aside, Georgiana airs her grievances with her parents, stemming from their lack of affection with her and her brother, how they seemed more concerned with appearances rather than taking care of their children's emotional needs. And I really need to say that I hate how they keep trotting out Freddie's suicide, coupling it with his sexuality every single time it comes up. All it does is remind me that the only LGBT rep we are getting is a dead one. It bums me out, if not completely upsets me. And Georgiana is using Freddie's death as a weapon, telling her parents that their lack of affection led to his suicide, and she includes herself in that they, so I don't think she's absolving herself of that quote-unquote crime. But they do manage to get somewhere in their conversation, making an emotional connection that Georgiana had been starving for. She'd been inside herself since losing her leg, yes, but only because she didn't feel she could rely on her parents for support. Now that they are promising to move forward and do better, she can face her challenges headlong. One such challenge was the fast approaching gala for Edward's charity, now only days away. Perspective shifts to Ed, where we find him in the clinic, not quite agonizing over the last few details about the gala, as well as the kiss he landed on the princess. But he realized that he was indeed taking on too much, and like Georgiana, he has to learn to let go and ask for help when he needs it. That way, he can start to take control of his own life. His ruminating is interrupted by a commotion in the clinic, where he discovers that Georgiana has paid them a visit, but in full royal splendor, bodyguards and all. And watching her converse with the crowd as one would expect a princess would, Ed has the presence of mind to fully understand what he had done in his lack of judgment, which was to land a kiss on said princess. She takes a moment away from the bodyguards and the crowd to talk to Ed in his office to confirm details for the gala, including the colors that she would be wearing. And as she leaves, giving him a very chaste kiss on the cheek, Ed knows that he is fully head over heels for her and in deep trouble. The night of the gala arrives and Georgiana waits to make her entrance, though the entire time she's wishing that she could have Edward near her. Finally, she's announced properly and makes her way to make an opening speech. Having worn a dress that specifically showed off her new prosthetic leg, she not only comes public with the knowledge of her injury, but to show support for Edward's cause. After her speech, she gets to work putting the charm to any wealthy potential donors, and Ed gets to watch the night he's been working so hard for go off without a hitch, thanks to the princess. He finally gets a chance to ask her for a dance, and due to her leg, she's understandably apprehensive, but she accepts. By the end of the night, they are all but trying to climb into each other's clothes, so they gracefully call it an evening, telling their guests that it's time to go home in the most polite way possible. When they are finally alone in a bedroom, we get a surprisingly steamy love scene with a moment that I am sure is meant to pull at the heartstrings. Ed's touch was so deft and gentle she hardly noticed what he was doing until he did the unthinkable. He kissed his way along her injured leg as though it was simply another part of her to be explored and appreciated. Those ridges and bumps where the surgeons had sewn her back together were now a map for his lips to follow. So gentle, so loving in a place more intimate than any part of her body. Somewhere no one else had ever touched her so tenderly. Ed turned to the most damaged part of her into something beautiful. A part of her that she no longer needed to be ashamed about. And I say it's a surprising moment because up until now, this has been the most chaste novel we've read so far, I think. We're about 30 pages to the end, and remember that this is a large print copy, and so this is the only sex we're going to get to read about. The kiss before was passionate, sure, but I wasn't expecting a full-out love scene based on what I'd read so far. I was thinking that I would probably read something along the lines of a fade-to-black sex scene, like you'd see in a romance film or a movie on the Hallmark Channel. And while we're on the subject of remaining pages, this looks like a great place to sew things up, doesn't it? The gala was a success. They've gone all the way. Surely there's not much more to look at here, right? Well, if I know anything about remaining page count, I know that there's too many for this to be over with. The next morning, they part ways, being as cute as they possibly can, and Georgiana has a full day ahead of her. She not only has to work with her PR team now that she's come out with her injury, but she also has a checkup with her recovery team to look at some discomfort she's been having. It's just a checkup, really. They'll probably tell her that she's working too hard. You know, take a break. Turns out, she will need further surgery, and the first person she wants to talk to after the news is Ed, of course. She tries to find him at his clinic, but she's told that he's at his parents' house. So she goes over there to see him, but he's not there, so she doesn't get to see him right away. However, she does get to meet his parents, and it becomes painfully clear that Ed is totally devoted to caring for them, and the last thing that she wants to do is add to said burden. As she's leaving, Ed finally shows up, thinking to himself how he can start separating himself from all the obligations he's piled onto himself. He's thinking of Georgiana, how he wants to be present for her, and he doesn't want to repeat the past mistakes of his last failed relationship. But we can all see it coming. Georgiana has gotten it into her head that she must be self-reliant, and she won't ask Ed to sacrifice his family for her. She tells him as much, adding in that she's in line for the throne, and their lives simply aren't compatible. Ed protests, but Georgiana throws in a verbal dagger, threatening to call her security. Ed seems to take the heel turn as she's gotten her confidence back and she doesn't need him anymore. She doesn't correct him, allowing him to make whatever conclusions that he wants and leaves. There's a mid-chapter break and it opens with the line, "It had been days since Georgiana had broken her own heart." And I don't know how to articulate how that line makes me feel, but I am dead certain that I have burned a pile of my own bad writing, and that exact line was a victim. But trying to move forward, Georgiana throws herself into work, including setting up a charity for the LGBTQ+ community, with another line I'm not thrilled about, another new milestone in their continuing evolution into the modern world. It is 2021, y'all are late. And this is just lip service to prove how accepting and forward-thinking the novel is. But during all her work, she gets a visit from Ed's brother, Jamie, the one who no one thought could walk, but was now more or less independent. He lays it out for Georgiana how miserable Ed is now that she's left him, even though he was making ways to be more independent for himself. And that's his word, not mine. Miserable. Kid's laying it on really thick, but Georgiana agrees that she'll think about talking to Ed, but she tells herself that she'll do it after her surgery, so that Ed can see that being with her won't be carefree. Back to Ed's perspective. He's teaching Jamie how to drive, and Jamie's laying it on thick for him too. Goaded by his brother, Ed resolves himself to amend whatever rift had torn between him and Georgiana. Returning to Georgiana's perspective, she is waking up after her surgery, and she hears a voice next to her that she wasn't expecting. Surprise, it was Ed. But how did he know that about her operation? Well, apparently the Queen had called him as a Hail Mary, and he took the chance. And they finally admit to one another that they love each other, and that there's nothing Georgiana could do to chase Ed away from her, and Ed was doing everything in his power to be able to stay by her side. With that, we get an epilogue 2 years later into the future. They aren't married yet, only engaged, but Georgiana is very pregnant. She's also been working at the clinic as a hydrotherapist, and they've been working towards being a somewhat private, independent couple. And it's a very sweet ending. Except, pedantic as I am, I have several hang-ups. For starters, I feel like the ending completely forgot that she was, you know, the crown princess of an entire country. It almost sounds like the book isn't considering that at all, just ignored. One of the things that I like about royal romances is watching how they have to balance each other's worlds and what sacrifices have to be made. Here, it looks like Georgiana gets to have her cake and eat it too. I feel like a more compelling conflict would have been her wanting to accept the position as a therapist at the clinic, but clashing with her royal duties. And how would have Ed navigated those choices? Would he have to give up something for the woman he loves? The novel made a big deal about him being devoted to his family, but clearly he only had to pull his head out of his ass to understand that delegating help shouldn't be hard. It wasn't like he was giving up anything, he was just allowing himself to relax from obligations that he picked up in the first place. And I touched on this a little bit with the breaking her own heart line, but that some of the writing in the book, it's not great. I don't want to be a total Debbie Downer, though. It was written by an Irish woman for what I assume was a UK and European audience. Possibly some of the writing choices just didn't translate for my American palate. But there were certain lines in the book that I wasn't sure were attributed to the correct character, and certain phrases threw me off. I still have no idea how the hell to translate "she has a poorly leg, just like you" into American vernacular, and Google's not helping. Of course, you've already heard me rant about the LGBTQ representation in the book. I don't think it's a surprise to say that I'm pretty disgusted with it. I know that's a harsh way to put it, but I really am disgusted. I know and love too many people under the rainbow umbrella for me to let this slide. Yes, suicide rates for the LGBTQ plus individuals is significantly higher than the rates for the heterosexual and cisgender population. And yes, it can be extrapolated that a major cause of this is the lack of familial support. But this book trots it out like a show pony to show how woke the author is. I really, really try not to call out the author like this, but I can't help it. Freddie's sexuality and suicide add nothing to the story. You could remove that entire plot point and the book would not have changed. Georgiana only uses it when confronting her parents to guilt them into showing her appropriate affection. The story already had a cause to fight for, a charity to build. It's just window dressing. No, it's worse. It is the sexy lamp. The idea that you could replace a character, usually a woman, in a story with a sexy lamp and the story wouldn't suffer for it. If you want to have LGBTQ plus representation in your story, great. Maybe don't kill them first, though. But the worst crime of all, above all things, the book was boring. I was not captivated by the stakes because I didn't feel as though they were very high. We just had a princess inside of her own head needing to learn a lesson about relying on others, and a doctor who just needed to put a couple of things down. I don't feel like they had to sacrifice anything, and I certainly don't feel that this was a royal romance. Much like my feeling on Freddie's inclusion in the story, Georgiana's status as a princess wasn't a huge influence on the plot. Even though they built a charity and saved a woman's life, I still feel like nothing happened. I know that events occurred, but I just can't shake how bored I was with it all. A great book is great. A bad book can be entertaining. A boring book is, well, at least the bad book made me feel something. And I know what the author was trying to do. She even said it at the beginning of the book, that it was meant to be a comforting hug, set in a world where the pandemic doesn't exist. I know I'm breaking my own rules again by mentioning it, but in my opinion, we cannot have a catharsis without tension. Fiction is an excellent way to explore and examine our emotions in a safe space, allowing us to immerse ourselves in a world where we might be able to solve our problems, even if it's just until the moment we close the cover. And with that rant over, let's look at Heather's final score. Beginning with the cover, I'll be charitable and give it a 3 out of 5. Yes, while I'm disappointed that the woman looks nothing like Georgiana was described, and how amazing it would have been if we saw a female lead with an unconventional look on the cover, it is nicely executed. You might remember how much I didn't like the cover on Pregnant with His Majesty's Heir from Episode 7, how fake it all looked. This cover looks nicely shot, competently composed, and not a hint of obvious Photoshop to be found. It just loses a lot of points for me with the female lead. Drama gets a 2 out of 5. I was looking forward to a royal romance with a medical backdrop, but I got a medical romance with a sprinkle of royal flavoring. It's not a long book, and there was absolutely time to explore the royal involvement. I like that they made Georgiana a veteran, however. She could have just been a royal-adjacent injured vet, like a duchess who is still technically a princess, and the story wouldn't have changed. I've got more thoughts on this, but there's a danger of another rant, so I'll move on. Romance, I'll give it 3 out of 5. Georgiana and Ed had good chemistry, at least, and they worked well together as both medical professionals and romantic partners. That's it. I don't even know what to do with realism, really. I can't get over my hang-up about Georgiana's royal status. I don't think that any of this story would have happened the way that it did if Georgiana had followed any kind of royal protocol. I feel like she would have had at least one bodyguard from the start of her escapades to Ed's clinic, secrecy or no. I mean, if staff members can't be trusted to be discreet, then you shouldn't have them on your staff. Ed's part of the story is rather realistic, though, and I can absolutely see how a doctor is devoted to his family would have trouble managing his time. I'll go ahead and give it a 2 out of 5. I don't even want to get into world building. Way back in with episode 1, with Crown Prince's Bought Bride, I mentioned that I didn't know anything about the kingdom in that book. Amazingly, I could tell you even less about Bardot, except that they maybe don't have adequate gay rights. 1 out of 5. It's not a secret that I didn't like this book, which is a shame because I thought I would. I wanted to let go and enjoy whatever awaited me inside those pages. And then I got left with a soggy mess of indifference, apart from the anger that I felt from Freddie's role in the story. For the crime of being boring, the surgeon and the princess will go to the shelf of shame with 1 dysfunctional royal family out of 5. Well, thank you for joining me, readers and romance seekers, and I hope to see you once again for Hopelessly Romantic. If you like the show, please visit us at hopelesslyromanticpodcast.com. If you have questions or just want to say hi, please email us at contact@hopelesslyromanticpodcast.com. The show is written and produced by me, Heather Songster. Our technical advisor is Kwangin Cho. Hopelessly Romantic is an H with K production. And it doesn't matter what you read, only that it's what you love.